everybody, Kendra the Vet Tech here, and today we're going to have an interesting conversation and take a look in the Vet Tech rearview mirror and see where we've been and how far we've come. So with us today for today's episode is Sharon. She's a registered veterinary technician, and she's also a veterinary technician specialist twice over in anesthesia and analgesia and an equine veterinary nurse. So welcome, Sharon. We're so excited to have you with us here today. And would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I've been doing this for about 40 years. I went to school to become a veterinarian, and I did not get into vet school the first time. So some veterinarians that I knew asked me to learn how to do anesthesia and emergency medicine in a very shortened form and run an emergency clinic for small animals that was being started in my hometown. And that's kind of how I got involved in it. I hate to say this, but it was in 1977. Was there for about 20 years, not at the emergency clinic, but I was in veterinary medicine there for about 20 years. Then I went to the University of Georgia to work in the anesthesia department so that I could get boarded in anesthesia into the veterinary technician specialist program there through them. And then after I was there 10 years, I moved here to Texas because I live in Texas now. And so now I've been here since 2006. And I now do anesthesia strictly for equine, but I'm also the office manager of that practice, but I have helped here with a small animal clinic doing some small animal anesthesia, but my main focus is equine.
Well, what a varied and colorful past. I'm really excited to dig into this a little bit more. And, you know, I usually don't require my guests to give years or how many years they've done things. But unfortunately, Sharon, in this episode, I'm glad you already divulged the 1977, because that was my first question. Where I really wanted to start was 1977. And so it sounds like things were quite different back then. Did you ever actually go through a veterinary technician program, a schooling, or was this all on the job training for you?
No, back then in the whole I am originally from Missouri, and the whole state of Missouri had one technician school at that time. And I went to University of Missouri because I wanted to go to vet school, and I studied agriculture. And when I got out of college, I started right into working. I did go for 6 weeks to the University of Missouri to learn anesthesia and emergency medicine there so that I could be a technician in an emergency clinic. But there wasn't really a lot of push to be registered or to go to school at all back then.
And so how many years did you do this before you did gain your RVT credentials? And what prompted you to make that step?
So I did that from 1977 until 1996. I didn't actually become registered at all until I went to Georgia. And then they wanted me to become registered to work at the university and work with vet students. So I basically bought a book of questions that was a review for the national test, the VTNE. And I went to Mississippi to take the VTNE and got registered in Mississippi so that I could grandfather in Georgia. So I was registered in Mississippi and Georgia. And that's how I got registered, was through just sitting the test and grandfathering in.
And you said that, you know, when you started out, you were the one doing the anesthesia for this clinic and did the extra little 6 week training. But what was the dynamic like overall with only one technician school in all of Missouri? Were there other credentialed technicians that you knew at the time, or maybe in that clinic, or how did that dynamic look?
Well, I didn't really know any registered technicians. Everybody that I worked with, the technicians at the emergency clinic, there were three of us all together. We were all just technicians who had gained knowledge and skills from working in a veterinary hospital. And at the time, the veterinarians didn't really care. They were happy to have somebody come right out of high school, start working, and then them teach the technician exactly how to do things the way they wanted it done. And I can tell you that some of the people working as technicians had very little skill. They just knew how to do a very few things that their veterinarian taught them to do the way they wanted it done. It wasn't like now where the technicians are, you know, go through schooling and then college courses and then gain clinical experience and really learn how to do things appropriately. A couple of the technicians that came and interviewed even with me, they said, oh yeah, I know how to put in a catheter. And it was totally not the way that you would have been taught at the university level. So it was more like, you know, assistants who were trained by the veterinarians. And I, at that time, didn't know anybody that was registered, actually, other than maybe the technicians that were at the university.
Yeah. You know, and some thoughts that I have are, it really does bring to light this gold standard, right, that we're taught in school. Everybody's taught the same basic standard that we all start out with. Like that, like you said, this is how we place an IV catheter. This is how we give an IM injection, right? We set that nice baseline standard by having the schooling in place, which it sounds like is a great thing that's happened within our profession to have this schooling available to provide that for people.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I was lucky. I actually ended up marrying a veterinarian who was a very good veterinarian. We're no longer together now, but I worked with him for 20 years and he was a very good veterinarian. He was a really good teacher. And several of the veterinarians I worked with at the emergency clinic were really good veterinarians who I learned a lot from. Had I not had that experience, I may never have gone on to do what I'm doing now, which, you know, speaking and getting my specialists and everything like that. And to your point about the schooling, you know, I've spoken to several veterinary technicians who were grandfathered in who think that it's not a good idea that we don't do that anymore and that they require people to go to school. And even though I was a grandfathered in technician, I'm going to tell you, I think that's an excellent idea for a couple of reasons. First of all, as you said, the people learn the same, you know, basic things, and they get a lot of, you know, skills that are taught by veterinarians and registered veterinary technicians. So when they come out, everybody knows that they know a certain amount of information. Second thing is they get a college education, even if it's an associate's degree, because if this career doesn't work out for them, they have something to fall back on. Maybe not being a veterinary technician, but there's lots of offshoots to our profession now, drug salespeople, research, all kinds of things. And even if they don't stay in veterinary medicine, there's a lot of things out there that make a better profession if you have any kind of college degree, you know, the basic classes, English, math. It's just, it elevates our whole profession and it elevates the education and life of the people who are trying to get into this career.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think you said you do some practice management now as well. And, you know, even if you didn't want to be a technician on the floor any longer, that still, even that associate's degree gives you a little leg up if you wanted to do something like move into a management position to stay in veterinary medicine, but no longer be a hands-on technician. So yeah, that degree even helps you out with a little leg up there, staying within a practice maybe that you're already in.
I think it's just a really good idea for people, you know, young girls come, maybe men too, but young girls coming out of high school that want to go into veterinary technician to work, you know, with animals. They're like, oh, but I really love animals. Okay, that's great. But you have to have a career decision. That way, going to college and figuring out what you want to do, it gives you 2 years at least of figuring out if this is what you really want to do.
Definitely. And the other thing that I just wanted to circle back to also, speaking about the college situation and veterinarians teaching technical skills. You know, when we find that on the job training, what I think is lost is the why, right? The reason why credential technicians are so great at what they do is because we understand the why behind what it is that we're doing. And sometimes when we get into this on-the-job training situation, the why is not always said. It's just said, I need you to do this. But we don't know why we're doing it. And that's the beauty, right? That's the beauty of the credential technician, is we know why we're doing what we're doing. And that can really get lost.
Right. Especially in equine medicine, the physiology of it and the pharmacology of it are so important. You know, so many times I run into people when I speak that say, oh, well, I know when this happens, I do this, but I don't really know why I do that. Well, what if that doesn't work? Then what do you do? Well, you don't know because you didn't know why you did it in the first place.
Exactly.
You know, you didn't know what you were trying to fix in the first place, especially in equine anesthesia, where I come from. You know, you have to think on a moment's notice because everything can be going along smooth. And then all of a sudden it go to the, you know, pits. So if you don't know what to do and why you're doing it or what you need to fix and what drugs are going to fix that problem, you're no help.
Yeah.
You're absolutely no help to your veterinarian at all. And I think that's the biggest thing. Somebody once said to me, well, I don't know why we have to take microbiology to get into veterinary technician. Well, you need to know some biology and you need to know some physiology. And if you don't, or you don't want to, this is the wrong career for you, as far as I'm concerned. It may be a job, but it's not a career.
Exactly. And speaking of a career, so let's go back to your career here, Sharon. So you did small animal for a long time. So the first 20 years, and then when you went to University of Georgia, was that all the first 30 years, all small animal, or how did that look?
No. No, in fact, I started out wanting to do large animal. My grandparents raised horses and cattle. So I wanted to do large animal medicine. And so I did small animal, but I had a friend who was a large animal veterinarian. And while I was working in small animal, I also helped him with anesthesia for equine surgery. I did some work with him as well. I worked 3 or so days a week in small animal. And then I did 2 or 3, maybe even 4 days a week with the equine veterinarian.
The usual workaholic.
I've done both. I even worked at the zoo for a while.
And that's cool.
And so, I've had a lot of experience in a lot of different places. And quite honestly, I think that was my greatest help, was that I went out and learned a little bit about a lot of things. So when I did get to the university level, I already knew quite a bit. And the anesthesiologists there were like, oh, well, go do that, or, you know, and pushed me off into different areas. Like I worked with in the exotics department. I anesthetized sea turtles and snakes and all kinds of crazy things. Yeah, it was really interesting. But my main focus my whole life has been actually large animals. So,
yeah. And then you've been doing, just strictly equine, it sounds like, for the last several years. So that's great.
Yes. Since 2006, actually.
All right. We talked in the intro. You are a VTS twice over. So you were in the field for a long time, 1977 to 1996, non-registered or uncredentialed, or I'm not really sure what did they call it back then? What were you referred to, your title?
I don't even know. I don't even think they even referred to it. They just asked me if I was registered or not. So I guess they would call me unregistered. I don't know. But the thing now is, I've had people say to me, oh, are you a veterinary assistant or a technician? And I'll be like, a technician. And they say, oh, well, you know, you're so smart, why aren't you an assistant? And I think that people have it. I think people in general have in their head that an assistant is actually higher than a technician because of physician's assistants in human medicine. And that's why I think, you know, NAFTA, the national organization, is trying to push for us to be called nurses. And I think that that would be a very good thing to happen, just because it would be more descriptive of what we actually do.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you there. I'm really for the RVN designation for, the public awareness and understanding of what it is that we do and how we are a vital part of the medical team for sure. Okay, so 77 to 96 were an unregistered technician, maybe is what they called us then. Yeah. And then in 1996, you got your RVT. So when did your first VTS come about?
Well, I wanted to apply in 2003, but I didn't have enough that, you know, they have a requirement of so many hours and years. So I didn't have quite enough. So then I ended up applying in 2000. Then I don't know what happened in between there, but then I ended up applying in 2004. And I actually got my certification or my credentialing in 2005. So I've been credentialed for 15 years, 16 almost.
And what about your equine one?
Okay, so the equine one, that's kind of cool. I was involved with the Equine Veterinary Technician Association, and they were talking about wanting to do a specialty. So they asked me if I would be on the organizing committee along with five or six other people who I was the only VTS at the time, but they had five or six other people who had been registered technicians for a very long time and were part of the board. A couple of them were board members of Equine Veterinary Technician Association. And so we got together and contacted NAFTA and said, hey, we want to do this. And we kind of had to prove that it was something that was necessary because there was no place else for equine only technicians to go to get registered because anesthesia and a couple other of the academies you had to do multiple species.
Right.
So equine is equine, you know. So we made a proposal and they said, finally, after a couple years, they said, okay, good. You can be an academy. So as the first applicants sat their exam in 2011, and along with them and the rest of us that were on the organizing committee, we became the first members. We were all charter members. We didn't have to sit the exam, but we wrote it. So I guess... And so anyway, but we do have to re-credential every 5 years, just like everyone else. So we can't just rest on our laurels and say, yeah, well, we made this thing. So we have to recertify just like everyone else. And in fact, I have to recertify this year. So,
oh man, big year. Uh-huh. Well, that's so cool. You know, I mean, it's great that you have two of the specialists credentials, but that's so awesome that you were part of creating one. That's absolutely phenomenal to have that as a feather in your hat.
Yeah. I would have really liked to have done emergency medicine as well, but gosh darn it. I just didn't have enough stamina for that to go through.
Three might be a little excessive, Sharon.
Yeah. When I did the test for anesthesia, there's a section that's just general. Then there's one section for small animal and one for large animal. And based on the cases that you turn in, they say you sit the small or the large, basically. So if you're an equine person, you don't have to answer as many small animal questions and vice versa.
Okay.
Well, when I went to take my test, two or three of the people that were on the committee knew me really well. And I was like, look, I want to sit it all. I want to take them all. And they're like, but you don't have to do that. And I'm like, I know I don't have to, but I want to be able to say that I was proficient in both because I at Georgia by that time, I was doing all the emergency anesthesia for small, large, and exotic. Well, there was no exotic section, but I said, I want to take both sections. And they're like, but then you're going to be graded. The grade's going to be based on the whole thing, on all the questions. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. So now whenever you ask, there's a couple people that if you ask them about me, they'll say, oh yeah, she's the gunner. And I turned in, because I was going to do both sections, I turned in 75 case logs. Well, I turned in 125 case logs. Well, now they only allow the applicants to turn in 60 because of me.
Anybody listening, Sharon's the reason why you don't need as many cases.
Yeah, because there's a couple people, they're retired now, but they'd be like, oh yeah, she was the gunner. That's what they call me. Whenever they email me, they go, hey gunner. And then they go on and talk to me. So
that's too funny. Too funny. Well, what do you think? You know, we've talked a lot about your career and how things looked, and overall, you know, what's your personal opinion on how the profession has changed in your long time spent in this career field?
Oh gosh. Well, for one thing, I think that the veterinary community as a whole has a lot more respect for what technicians can do on their own. And that has stemmed, I think, from most of the states developing practice acts that outline what a registered technician can do, what an assistant can do, and with how much supervision. Because I think now, when you talk to veterinarians, especially small animal veterinarians, but large animal ones too, they have a serious respect for the technicians in their practices and how much help they are to the practice and to the doctors themselves. That wasn't always the case. 30 years ago, I would talk to girls that worked in practices where the doctor barely spoke to them. They said, and they kind of barked at him and said, do this and do that. And they weren't consulted on cases. They weren't, you know, told what was going on per se. They just were there to do a job.
They were just warm bodies.
Exactly. Now I think technicians in general, and I hope this is still the case, they're consulted. The doctors actually know that their technicians know things. And they say, you know, I can't really figure this out. What do you think? Or, you know, go take an x-ray and tell me what you see. You know, it used to be that the veterinarians did everything. They took their own x-rays. They did all the treatments themselves because they didn't trust anybody. Well, now the technicians are used as an advantage or an asset to the clinic. And I think that's been the biggest change over the course of the years that I've been there. And then of course, at the university level, the technicians are, they might as well be veterinarians the way they teach the veterinary students, because they have a lot of responsibility to teach the doctors that are there. There aren't that many of them. There's two, you know, one or two surgeons at a time on service. There's one or two anesthesiologists, but the technicians are the ones that are teaching the students too. So in that regard, you have to see where the education, the college education, is just essential, you know, because you don't want, you know, pardon my expression, but, you know, a little high school student teaching the vet student. But I think the career path is ever evolving, but it's getting better every day. Just think about what, you know, when I was first out of school, now, of course, it was 40 years ago, but, you know, we made like $5 an hour. I mean, you know, you might as well have made minimum wage, you know?
Yeah.
And now technicians are making a living, and some of us are making a really good living. It used to be that it was just a second income in a family sometimes, you know, because they weren't making enough to support themselves. And that has changed, I hope, overall for the better.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, it has. I feel like we still have a long way to go. But again, I think that's where that VNI, the Veterinary Nurse Initiative, is really pushing for that for us. So mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think looking out on the horizon, things are looking bright. The future's looking bright. And I'm excited for more changes. I mean, we've already come so far just in your career, Sharon. And so that makes me really excited for our future. I think it's going to be great.
Well, and I think now it's actually becoming a career. The technicians, a lot of the technicians, at least the ones, you know, you and people that have come and listen to our talks and our conferences and things like that, they're trying to make it a career. I've been at this, as you know, for over 40 years, and I never dread going to work. And if that, you know, if people like that get involved and want to help animals and want to push our profession further down the line, gosh darn, I'm excited for that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, is there anything else, Sharon, anything else, you know, along your path that you'd like to share with us, changes you've seen or other things you'd like us to know about?
Well, I kind of want people to realize that there are so many opportunities in our profession. There's all kinds of academies. And if a person is interested in one particular part of veterinary medicine, say cardiology or internal medicine or equine nursing, whatever, there are so many opportunities for them to get more education and further their career by becoming a, you know, an academy member. I mean, that's just been in the last 20 years that we've started to have the academies, and there's tons of them. There's nutrition and internal medicine and dentistry. There's zoo animals, even, you know, all kinds of academies. It may not increase your pay like exponentially, but the fact that you go and apply to those things and take those exams and pass them and have those extra initials behind your name, it makes it so much better, because veterinary medicine as a whole, this is one thing I have seen. It used to be that one doctor did everything. Mm-hmm. Now there are so many specialties in veterinary medicine for veterinarians. We do at our clinic, we do sports medicine and orthopedic surgery, and we have rehabilitation. We do no reproduction, but right down the road from us, there's a veterinarian who does nothing but reproduction in horses. I mean, we're in a big horse area, so that makes it good.
Yeah.
But there's another person that does ambulatory and dentistry, and they have a technician. The reproduction doctor has a technician who is specialized in reproduction. She's a veterinary technician specialist in reproduction. My daughter is a reproduction specialist technician. So that's going to be the new frontier, basically, is people specializing and working for those specialists, so that the reproduction specialist veterinarian has a technician who also specializes in reproduction, and they make it just so much better for their patients. There can be a specialist in surgery and work in a surgical practice where, you know, a referral practice. There's emergency clinics all over the place. So there's emergency vet technicians. And those are things that if you have an interest in one of those things, you can just spend a little bit of time getting specialized and work in an area where you are A, respected and utilized and do so much stuff. I was in the hospital last year and I was amazed at how little the nurses were actually consulted or were allowed to do in human medicine. And I thought to myself, you know, if that's how we were treated in veterinary medicine, nobody would want to be a technician or a veterinary nurse, you know? And I think that we have, as a profession, learned to delegate things that are interesting to do. I mean, yes, some of it's, yes, I still have to stock the syringes and I still have to, you know, I have to wash the instruments when we're done with surgery and things like that. And yeah, those things are mundane and you don't really want to do them and you have to, but there's so many opportunities for us to do stuff that we really enjoy and we feel like we are really helping our practice, our veterinarian, and our patients.
Yeah.
And that's what makes veterinary medicine at this time so much more exciting.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on all of those fronts. I think that seeing this new, you know, there's more academies all the time. It seems like there have been a couple in the last couple mm-hmm. of years that have come about. And I love mm-hmm. that. I love to see that we are going from this big, broad jack of all trades, And we're narrowing it down, whittling it down to just these specific areas that we really love that we can do the best for our patients in. And I agree with you. I think that is just absolutely fantastic. I'm excited for that change.
Think about this. Human doctors and nurses have to deal with one species. Look at us. We have to do 10 different, you know, there's all kinds. And, you know, now there's feline practice specialists. Well, there have been for a number of years. I had a very close friend who was a feline veterinarian in Chicago. She's passed away now, but she was the person who did all the initial research on diabetes in cats. And she had a practice in Chicago that was a cat practice. And when you went there, there was carpet on the floor and fancy furniture and the cats had to come in crates and they didn't go on the floor or anything like that, but still nonetheless, and that was, you know, one area, but she specialized in cats. They're different than dogs, and dogs are different than horses, and horses are different than cows. And I think that, you know, we have to, as a profession, we have to know so much more just because we have to know the differences between those species. So if we can specialize in just dogs or just cats or just horses or just nutrition or just surgery, that's the way we provide better care for our patients.
Yep.
And I think the technicians specializing and becoming technician specialists through an academy is the way for us as our profession, part of the profession, to help the veterinarians do their jobs better.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that wraps us up for today, guys. And actually, Sharon, I do like for my guests to leave a tip or a trick at the end of the episode. Do you have anything for our listeners today?
Okay. So I have a little tip and it's a silly one, but
that's okay.
I have found that it does works good. I started what I call my goodie basket and I have it sit on my desk. And when I go to conferences, when I talk to drug reps, they all have advertising stuff, don't they? Pens, chapstick, all kinds of stuff that they hand out at the meetings. So when I go to the meetings, I go around and my boss says that I act like a homeless person and I take a big sack, one of the sacks that one of the companies gives out, and I collect stuff like pens, chapstick. Oh, I got some scrunchies, keychains, anything that they have. And I take it back and I put a basket on my desk and it's called the goodie basket. And when the clients come in, if they're waiting, we're running behind or something, I say, oh, why don't you check out our goodie basket? And they go through it. Like there's things in there sometimes like, oh, one of the companies made these things that you stick on the dash of your car and it's kind of rubbery and you can put your phone up there and it holds your phone or your change on your dash.
Nice.
And there's all kinds of things. I mean, I can't tell you, squeeze balls, you know, little stuffed animals, whatever they have. And I take it. I mean, I listen to their stuff. I mean, I listen to what they're telling me too. But I say, you know, I just tell them flat out, I have this goodie basket for clients for advertising. Do you have anything you could give me? And I'm telling you, they give you stuff. And then when they come by your clinic, your drug reps come by. I have three or four drug reps that every time they come, they bring me a basket of stuff. Here, I brought you some more chapsticks, or here, I brought you some more keychains for your goodie basket. Cool. And I have clients that when they hear that I'm going to a conference, a day or two after I get back, they come in and say, "What'd you bring us?" And they go to the goodie basket. So, and it's just PR for your clinic and for your, you know, your products people. And it's something that you can do for your clients. It's free. And they get to, and then you get to talk to them about the products as well. Cause they'll take a pen and go, you know, "What's OSFOS?" And I'll be like, "Oh, well, that's a, you know, product that we, you know, we inject, and it, and it's like osteoporosis medicine for horses." And I can't tell you how much fun that is for the clients and for me. And it's good for the practice because it gets information out about some of the products that we use, and it gets people thinking, "Oh, I bet my horse might need that." And then they mention it to the doctor and so on and so forth. So I just call it my goodie basket.
I think that's great. I don't think that's silly at all, Sharon. I think all your reasonings on that are solid, and that is a really good tip. That's so great.
Right. unless your boss is there and he won't let you tell him where you're from because he thinks you're acting like a homeless person.
Yeah. And for those of you out there, if you see Sharon wandering around a conference, she's not homeless. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that's my little tip. And while you're at the conference, the other thing that is good, that I think is good, is if you learn something in one of your talks or in a wet lab that you can bring back to your clinic and either help the clinic and try to institute it. I know some veterinarians are really hard to talk into things, but like one of my friends went to a clinic and the wet lab, she learned how to do McMaster's fecal exams in, you know, for horses. Mm-hmm. And she went back and talked to her doctor about it, and they set it up in their lab. So now instead of having to send it out to the lab, now the clinic does it and they make money. And other clinics found out about it, and everybody and all the other clinics didn't want to have to buy the equipment. So they send their fecals over there too. And they ended up having to hire somebody to work in the lab just to help out with all the extra work. So it made another job. It made the clinic profit. It showed that the veterinarian that she was thinking about what could help the clinic make more money, and she could teach somebody else to do it. So, I mean, that made her a little bit more indispensable.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good kind of secondary one. I mean, that's what the CE is for, right? We go there, we learn things, and that's the point, is to bring it back home and institute something new. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps us up for today, guys. Sharon, thank you so much. What a great time chatting with you.
Oh, Kendra, thank you. It was great. Anything to do, anything to help out. And it was so nice to meet you in person, especially. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And that wraps us up for today, guys. Check me out at Kendra the Vet Tech on Facebook or Instagram. I also have a website at kendrathevettech.com. If you guys have any questions, concerns, feel free to message me on any of those platforms or at my email at kendrathevettech@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.